Married But Looking is your first collection of short stories, and the stories seem to be organized around a theme. To me, the one story that is a microcosm of the others is Just Like Spain. Let me just explain. In the story, a man constantly reminds his wife about that everything around them is just like a trip that he claims to have taken to Spain a decade ago. And this obsession with Spain becomes a metaphor for his desire to see what else is out there. I don't know if this was the first story you wrote for this collection, but it captures the overall theme in a nutshell.
Yeah, it definitely was one of the earlier ones. And one of the things I like about that story is that this guy has gotten to a point in his life where everything that happens in the present tense reminds him of something that happened in the past or something that he wished happened in the past or something along those lines. It's kind of a middle-aged story.
Okay. Where'd you get the idea for this?
Unfortunately, it's an all too familiar story for a lot of people, myself included. You know, you kind of look back. Things remind you of the better times. Not that for him those were better times, but that they were more interesting times for him.
It's almost as if, and I'm not necessarily thinking of the main character in this story, but in many of the stories, you have characters who are almost looking for permission. It's almost as if they're looking for the okey-doke from their partner to go out and look and have this imaginary fantasy, if not a real relationship with somebody else.
Right, that's right. They're always sort of, I mean, that's what, to me, the looking in the title of the book is about. It's not really about, it's not necessarily about looking at other women or looking at other men, but it's about looking around and trying to see what you have and seeing what could be better. And as soon as you get something, you're maybe trying to figure out what would be a little bit better than that. In the one story where the guy does get the okey-doke from his spouse, he can't pull the trigger on it anyway. So it's everybody's kind of just locked into their own worlds.
And for those listening, which story is that?
I forget what I had. I think it was called One Indiscretion. Did I change that? Yeah, One Indiscretion. It's that story.
I know that these titles go through lots of changes before
that one in particular. I had trouble selling, so I called it about four different things. But that actually was the original title anyway. So
these stories focus not just on looking, but also the fantasy that goes along with looking for somebody new. And Tantric Butterfly takes this fantasizing, I guess, to a new level when the object of the man's fantasies materializes almost out of the blue.
Right.
A husband comes in during a snowstorm to find his family as a guest, a beautiful, mysterious woman whose car got stuck in their front yard. And it takes the man a little while before he realizes who this woman is and where he has seen her before. I don't want to give away the story, but it's a wonderful illustration of a man's fantasy life colliding with his real life. Talk a little bit more about Tantric Butterfly.
Well, that man in that story, he spends so much time ordering things. I think he runs a framing company with frames pictures, and he's all about context. And so he's able to, when he has this woman that he looks at on the internet, there's a context for that fantasy. But when she shows up at his house under unusual situations, he can't fit her into that particular context, and it leads to all sorts of hilarious outcomes.
What is this?
I was hoping for anyway.
Oh, sure. It is a funny story. And I find it interesting because I guess I haven't read many stories where suddenly a fantasy becomes the reality in the story. And suddenly we have this, you know, how does this guy fit? How does he deal with this? Where does he put this woman
right.
who had previously been compartmentalized
right.
over here?
And how does he talk to her? And if he's not online, you know, what does he say to her face to face?
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that.
Well, so I think in the story, the way it works out is that she's much more in control than he is because she's used to that role in people's lives. And when he can't, I believe the way it ends up is that he goes back to his own fantasy life of other fantasies that he has at the end of the story, and he realizes that he can't. He sort of feels like a schmuck, to put it nicely.
What's the larger story here about, you know, people who have what look like very, very set lives, families that they're proud of, partners that they're happy with in most ways, and yet there's this constant longing to look elsewhere, if just to look?
Yeah, and it's more than just looking, too, because it's fantasy, and it is, and in some cases, in some of these stories, there are slight transgressions, and in some cases, there's more than just slight transgressions, and it has to do with how those transgressions affect the partner, and then you and your partner have to sort of figure out, what are we going to do at this point, or is this going to be part of the relationship? And I think in one of the stories, one of the characters is writing on Facebook and says, I think that may be what the marriage is sort of trying to figure out what the marriage is. And once you have that figured out, you kind of, you shift the goal lines a little bit and see what comes of it.
Well, you brought up the final story in the collection, Married But Looking, the title story. Here, a middle-aged couple travels to Paris, and the wife continues to send Facebook messages to an old flame back in the States. The husband knows about this affair, in quotes. Talk a little bit more about Married But Looking.
And he feels betrayed by this transgression that he knows is going on, this sort of online relationship, and partially because he knows that it's a mental thing, and even though it is not consummated, it's taking place in her mind, and he can't get in there, and he can't control that. And so I have him in that story also trying to cross a line, and he goes to the red light district in Paris and tries to engage with a prostitute there, is unable to do it. Yeah, I mean, I think that they were both trying to figure out what can we do to shake things up a little bit. And then in the end, they have to figure out if they want to stay together, even though, you know, on the outside, you would say that that's not a big deal. But to both of them, they both felt like they had transgressed.
At the end of the book, the woman reaches into her purse and takes out a little object that becomes symbolic, I guess, of their efforts to get beyond this transgression and heal their relationship.
I ended up with them on the airplane, and she's got this mustard jar that she was going to give to her Facebook boyfriend, and I think they end up eating all the mustard, so it's gone. The gift is gone, and that's kind of like her gift to him, and he says he's going to learn French next time they come to Paris, and that's his gift to her.
I'd like you to read that part.
Okay. They're on the airplane going home, and it began with them on the airplane going to Paris, and they're playing paper, rock, scissors, and she tells him what she's going to throw, and he doesn't believe her, and because of that, he loses the paper, rock, scissors. Of course, his name is Silvers. He's not, you know, he never wins. He's always in second place. When the flight attendant announced the meal, he lowered both their trays. Valerie had her face pressed up against the window for a time and only turned when the sandwich, tightly wrapped in cellophane, was placed in front of her. "Wow," Silver said, looking at her eyes, which were red and puffy. "Bad air on the plane drying you out?" "No, I was crying." She took a bite of her sandwich. After chewing for a time, she said, "We can make this better." From her carry-on, she pulled out a small box wrapped in her laundry, clawed some gift wrapping, and pulled out a mild mustard pot. He watched her struggle to pull the cork out, not saying anything, not quite sure what was happening. With the plastic knife, she glopped enormous quantities of mustard on her sandwich, and the same amount on his, scraping the sides and bottom of the pot finally so that there was none left. But she squished the tops of their sandwiches and jammed the first bite into her mouth and spoke to him between chews. "Eat your sandwich," she told him. All he could taste was the coarse mustard, acidic, tangy, more mustard than he normally ate in a month, but he understood that it was important to choke down every bite. And even after signaling for a second bottle of water, he couldn't get the taste from his tongue. And after they finished and wiped up the drippings, Valerie dumped their trays into the plastic bags offered by the attendant, and Silvers didn't say anything when the ceramic mustard pot went with it, gone with the rest of the garbage. Later on, when they played paper, rock, scissors, and she told him exactly what she was going to do before she did it, "I'm going to throw paper now, I'm going to throw rock," he believed every word she said, meeting her scissors with rock and her paper with scissors, and in this way, Silvers found it possible, at least for a little while, to feel like a winner.
You know, what's funny about this story, in which there is a minor transgression, and some of the other stories where there are more serious transgressions, is that nobody's going out and having a really good time, a really successful affair. Why did you decide to do that with this book?
You know, I'm not really sure. I guess that, you know, I teach fiction at Northern, and one of the things that we talk about early on is that when a character sets down to, has a plan and sets down to, tells the reader, here's what my plan is, and then just kind of executes the plan and nothing goes wrong, it's not a very good story. Certainly not compelling. So, you know, it sort of moves the story along that things go awry and that, you know, that there's confusion and then you have to change your plans. And then, so it's sort of a, you know, just a fictional technique.
So the history of great letters is nothing but a series of one disappointment after
That's
another.
Right. If we could actually make things happen, there would be no art.
Dan Libman is the author of Married But Looking, a collection of short stories published by Livingston Press. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.